What happened is on February 28, 2006, we went in on a piece of land and we stayed. Before that, there were three women that did a lot of background checking on the land, just to double check to make sure it wasn't surrendered and it wasn't stolen, and it wasn't. And during that time, the federal and the province came forward and they wanted to talk to us, and they had just started negotiating. They also, it was the first time the federal government came to us. In 1924, the Klan mothers and the chiefs were ousted out of the council house. They were thrown out, and they were beaten, and they even used pitchforks. And that was in 1924, and this was the first time they talked to the traditional people, the Haudenosaunee. In the meantime, during that time, the government put in place an elected band chief, and he is mandated through the government, and they have a band council, which is run under the Indian Act, which is part of the government. That's all that is. We don't like it. We don't want to be under it, and that we resist that too. But in the film that you have seen, will explain a little bit and will help you to know what it's like there. While they were negotiating in February, they told the province and the federal government, told our chiefs that no harm would come to us. About 3 weeks later, on April 20th, not less than a month later, they raided on us. There were 16 people there. They were beaten. They were tasered, sometimes tasered more than once. They were pepper sprayed, bear sprayed. And there was quite a few police. There was 5 to 6 police on one person. They were on our elderly, 85 years and older. They were on children, and they were on youth. And even though that same night that the chiefs were negotiating, that very same night, late in the night, they were promised nothing would happen to us. And at 4:20 in the morning, the OPP was even at that meeting. The OPP walked out and they knew what they were going to do. In the early morning of the raid, they blocked off all roads and access for anybody to come and help us, our own people, for anyone to come and help us. There was a few, couple OCAP people. OCAP is the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty. They're based in Toronto, and they're young people, and they're very supportive. And those ones, the OPPs told them to leave, and nothing would happen to them, and that's how they kept it, which we're grateful for that, because they were there supporting us, and we wouldn't want anything to happen to anyone. And as time went on that morning, people were able to get in and help us, a few people. There were about 50 people. The OPP, which is the Ontario Provincial Police, were fully armed. They carried M16s, AK-47s, and they even had higher weapons than that they couldn't carry. You'll see in one of the films that the back end of the van is broken out, and you'll see them with the guns like this. I personally don't know what that type of gun is. And to explain further too with this here, you've seen where it said Douglas Creek Terrorist Camp. Douglas Creek is what they named it, the Henko brothers, when they bought that piece of land and they cleared it. They stripped it. They stripped it of all the topsoil and left just clay. They were going to build a lot of homes there, a few hundred homes on that piece of land. And that's what we stopped, the development. They've developed all our land. Later on, I'll show you what we were supposed to have and what we have. When we went in and stopped them, and we did have people coming to get through to help us, that morning, we are spiritual. And that morning, because that land is our burial ground, I guess this is the time in history that we're making. This is the first time we ever stood up for us on our reserve to say, enough is enough and no more. Because there was over 200 policemen that came in. And when they looked around, they said they seen 300 Ongwe Hoys. There was only about 50 of us. And when they seen us all, and what happened during that time, that after people started getting away, after people were dragging people away from the OPPs, we started gathering together. We tried to get everybody together. We were able to walk the OPP out of the land only because they had seen so many of us, because they were armed. We were not armed. We did it peacefully, and we did it unarmed, and that's exactly how we keep it today. We've had government officials ask to be on there because it was reported that we were building trenches to build to hide our guns. We were called terrorists, and we're still terrorists today. At least that's the Canadian government classifies us as. When we asked them to retract the statement, they said they would. I haven't heard that they did. So we're still at that. In Caledonia, you did see one part where it said idiot night in Caledonia. What used to happen when that happened, the town that sits right with us is Caledonia. Every Friday they used to gather, Friday or Saturday, and they'd all gather. So we would just stand there. And there would always be riot gear OPPs. And they used to stone us. They used to throw other things at us, bottles, whatever they could get, they threw at us. But we all always maintained peace. We never hollered back. We never picked up a pebble and threw it back. We always stood still. It didn't matter. It mattered to the young, especially the young boys, the youth. And they used to cry because they couldn't understand why us older ones took it and why they had to stand there and let it happen to their elders. The only thing we were able to do was hold them while they cried and tell them it was not our way, and it isn't our way. We buried our guns thousands of years ago underneath the Tree of Peace. That's how we became Six Nations. There were six of us that got together and buried our guns, and we left them there. Some people asked if today, don't we think we would be a time maybe to dig those up, and we still say no. That isn't how we're going to do this. That's why it's important for us to tell a lot of people about us, because it's going to get out, even in this side of the world, because they've already crucified us on that side of the world. A lot of people don't know about us. Some people know little about us, and some people only heard the bad things about us. And this is our only way that we can do it, is by word of mouth, to tell our side the story. It's our only way we can do it. That's the way we were handed down our culture, by word of mouth. And that's the only way we can pass things on, is by word of mouth. And another thing you've seen in there were trucks going through fast. On that 40 hectares, we had different camps set up inside the perimeter. And we had small radios that people donated. And what would happen is we had one base sitting in the middle, and that person could hear everybody's radio because he had the other end. And then he would call out for help to the other places. Because the OPP and the Canadian citizens were still trying to come in on the camp. And when there would be just a few here and there, they would call for backup. And that's what we would do, is fly over to the other side and help them. We had a no-fly zone. At least that's what they agreed when we asked them. And that didn't hold up either. We were had helicopters all the time, and before I left, we had the Army helicopters and Army planes flying low over us. And before I came, we stopped another development, but this time it only took us 8 hours from beginning to end to solve it. Not solve it, to stop it. And it's hard. It was hard in the beginning. A lot of people lost a lot of things. Some were losing houses, some were losing. It was hard on the families because everybody was so afraid that we'd be raided, that people were spending 24 hours a day with us, taking shifts. And that was good because for the first time, whether Canada knew it or not, they united us. They united us across Canada and in the U.S. We probably did things that we haven't done for 100 years, if not more. For once, we're doing everything together when we're backing each territory up. When they raided on us and there were busloads of Ongwehois coming from the United States, they stopped them at the border and they wouldn't let them cross. And if they came from B.C., there was a few that made it out from different provinces. But on the whole, if they knew they were coming, they were stopped and told to go back. And we had few supporters from different areas. That's how I met Ellie. She had come to Canada, and then she came to the site, and she helped us there. And people always ask us why we're saying no, not why we're just now finally saying no. We are the biggest territory in Canada. I know a lot of things happened to my people through the history. There has been a lot of things that, oppressions that made the elders not want to make any trouble. And I understand that. I understand why they stood by and they watched all their land go, because it was through intimidation that this happened. But with the younger ones, they know enough. They're stronger. We made sure it didn't happen to them. And that's how the site really began, was by some three amazing women. One was 17 years old, and the two were older than that, but not. The oldest was 33, maybe. And when they walked in on Douglas Creek, they had to face bulldozers. She stood there with her little kids, 5 and 7, one on either side of her. And they stood there, and they came at them. It didn't matter to them. And the little girl asked her, Mommy, why is that bulldozer want to hit us? She couldn't answer her. And she told her she didn't know. But she also told them that they could go to the car and sit, and they didn't want to. Because we're telling the little ones now that it's good for them to come, it's good for them to listen, and it's good for them to know what is going on. We're not going to take that away from them. So she told her that she didn't know why they're coming at her, but the 7-year-old girl also knew it was our land, her land. So she stood there with her mom. They came very, very close, but they didn't hit her. The struggle has been hard because even though we're negotiating with the government, which is a good victory, because like I said, it's been 1924 since they would even talk to us, the Haudenosaunee people, the traditional people. And we've made little strides. But it's hard because they're still breaking promises, even as fast as they are making them today. When we took the barricades down, they promised us that if we take them down within 2 weeks, Birch Track, which is a piece of land, would be in our name within 2 weeks. It's been over a year, and it's still not happened. And we took them down. In my eyes, that was in a lot of people's eyes, that was the worst thing we could have done, was take all the barricades down. But we did it, and we did it in good faith. We showed good faith. We've been still showing good faith. But in the way that we do things, we do it with 100% consensus. We sit in our council on three sides. We sit in our clans. And we discuss every little thing that comes back from Main Table, and we discuss things that go to Main Table. So when our chiefs are sitting up there at the table negotiating, they're telling them exactly what we want to tell them, but also they got 100% people backing them up. That's the only way we'll do things now. There's a lot of good things that came out of this, regardless of how they did it. Like I said, we've been unified for the first time with other nations and territories that we didn't even know were out there. Also, they brought us together as people. A lot of the culture, a lot of the language that was gone and stripped from us is coming back. Our way of life is coming back. People are starting to turn back and stand up and sit. Although nobody liked the band council, everybody just let it happen. But now they're not. Now they're standing up and they're unifying us within each other in our own, in my own territory. We're finally bringing the traditional way back out and people are coming back. A lot of them. But we're all paying a price for doing this. We get picked up. We've gotten charged. There's a lot of men that's been charged. A lot of women have been charged. But there's a lot of charges coming, too. And usually it's for nothing. We have two men that's charged with attempted murder. And if that comes out, that's because ATF was on our site. That's from America. What United States had to do with this, I don't know, but they were there. And it doesn't matter what they say they were there for, because they said they just wanted to observe. What right does United States to have to come to observe us as Ongwehoe people on such a small piece of land? And there were about four men that went over to the car, and they did seize the car, but they didn't do it with arms. But they did yank the door open and told them that they knew they were the police. Actually, they were surprised it was ATF. They thought it was just the OPPs doing the same thing they do day in and day out. And one of them jumped out of the car because since it was ATF, they didn't want us to know that OPP had arranged this. That's the Ontario Provincial Police. They didn't want anyone to know that they arranged this. So the OPP jumped out of the car and he fell. He scraped his face. Two of our men are charged with attempted murder who didn't even touch him. Those two are not in the custody of the Canadian police, nor will we turn them over to them. That's not our way either, because we're bringing back our way of governing ourselves, which means our way of policing ourselves. But there have been some that's been caught. A young man that defended an 85-year-old man with 5-6 police officers on him. He was charged. He was picked up, I don't know, 8 months later, 6 months later. And it took him 3 months to get a bail hearing. Another man was picked up. It took him 8 months to get a bail hearing. A bail hearing. They still got trial and everything else ahead of them. They stop us wherever they can stop us. When you seen that man sitting in a tree, that's what we're defending, because they had taken off. They stripped that land of everything. So it's all barren. And that they put stumbling blocks in everything we do. They told us if we can prove that it was a burial ground, they would put it in our name with no problem. We had an archaeologist of our own, and she went out there and she worked for about 3 weeks. After 3 weeks, the main table said they didn't want that because they were afraid that she could plant something in her of ours. So main table said they couldn't have that. So we said, fine, what do you want us to do? They said, hire somebody of their own. We did that. After we searched out the one we wanted, the day they were supposed to come on, the province met them, and they told them, if you go on there to help them, we're going to take away your license. So nobody would come on. So those are a lot of the things that we have been fighting. Everything like that. They've made it impossible for a lot of things. But also, they made it good. I don't even know if they know how the positive things that have come out of it for us.